Welcome to Gardunio's. My name's Trent. I'll be taking care of you today. Can I start anybody off with some beverages? Margarita? All right, how about some of our tableside guacamole?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 2, for the week of August 26, 2013. I am American Policy Institute Director David T. Cole, and I'm here with Purple Tea Kettle Joe Reed.
High-pitched whistle.
Pontiac Aztec Sarah D. Bunting.
As seen on Survivor.
Ted Fucker Tara Ariano.
I fuck Ted.
And Awkward Moment Guacamole David Bunting.
We make it right at the table.
So, Breaking Bad. Everybody.
Yeah.
For everybody except Dave Cole.
I can't wait to talk about last night's episode a little bit, but we'll be using that to launch into a larger discussion of what's next for AMC after this, the default flagship show, I would say, goes off the air in a few weeks. Anyone have any observations about Tableside Guacamole? I personally kind of wished he just had showed up in a giant sombrero and started making it while they were talking.
Well, after that first time that he interrupted them at like the most awkward moment, I figured we were in for at least like three or four more of those. He caught on to the awkwardness of the moment sooner than I thought he would have. But
that's a good waiter.
That is a good waiter. Yeah. I'm going to say to his great credit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm just going to go get some waters.
Yeah.
Yeah, too bad half the table left, and then I'm sure the remaining diners had no appetite, and he probably got, like, a quarter. Yeah. Poor Trent.
Yeah. I'm surprised that Hank and Marie didn't stick around just to, like, slam margaritas and drown their sorrows.
Just leave the bottle.
They would have needed it after for that DVD that they ended up watching. I felt like a dope for how shocked I was that that's what was on the DVD. I'm not sure whether I expected a full confession, but I don't think I was expecting the reversal of fortune thing that we got so blatantly. I guess even after all these seasons, I'm not quite prepared for Walt to be as blatant a dick as he is.
Do we think that this was his end game all along, that he always was sort of building this case against Hank in case he would need it?
I can't imagine, but I also feel like it's plausible that he had it in the back of his mind as a contingency because he's always thinking.
Yeah.
I agree.
Sort of how I feel like Jesse always in the back of his mind was working through in his head possible ways that Walt could have been the one to poison Brock,
yeah.
Which is why I think that works also, that he figured it out from such a seemingly tangential thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people on the internet seem to have like issues with that they thought it came too easy. But in my mind, like Jesse's clearly been working that moment and that few days over in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's also easy for us to forget that, you know, the events are much more recent to the characters than they are to us.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, that happened for us, what, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
Whereas with Jesse, it was just a couple months ago, if
right.
that. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's more plausible for him to come to that realization when he did.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. I was a little bit surprised that the internet did, but the internet is what it is.
Yes.
Yes.
Speaking of not reading comments.
No. You hear that, internet? You bunch of fucking dullards.
I mean, particularly since this episode had that, the sort of, you know, Jesse having maybe the sense memory of getting pickpocketed before and then figuring everything out sort of in a flash, followed by the newsroom. I don't know if me and Joe are the only ones who watched it, or Joe, if you even watched it last night.
And I haven't watched last night's yet, but whatever.
All right. May I spoil it slightly?
You may.
Spoilers aho, fun ahoy.
Okay, so very quickly, because who fucking cares? It's the newsroom. But what happens is this whole interview hinges, somebody cooked an interview, and for extremely contrived reasons, the person that was getting interviewed insisted on being beside his TV that was currently showing March Madness.
Which I knew was going to come into play.
Well, obviously, because there's no way that ever would happen. But anyway,
right.
So the whole thing, Mackenzie finally figures out that he doctored the raw footage by looking at the corner of the screen and seeing the shot clock. But before that happens, because it jumps all around, but before that happens, there are, no kidding, two different conversations about people watching clocks, and the one about, are there any other sports where they count down how fast you have to do things?
Oh my
God. For like
God.
5 minutes. It's unbelievable how ham-handed it was. That episode felt like it was 7 hours long. Getting back to Breaking Bad, that was a much better way to handle the same kind of thing, where it's like somebody having a realization all in a flash when they're thinking about something else, because that is, you know, neurologically sometimes how those things happen.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it was set up a bit last week as well when they were having that conversation about Mike.
Yes.
And that Jesse sort of chooses to believe him, and of course this episode we find out that he doesn't, and certainly never did, but like for his own health,
right,
just decided to buy Walter's story.
Yeah, that moment in the premiere seemed, at least to me, like he was saying that he believed Walt to get Walt to stop talking about it.
Yes.
And yeah, I was glad that that came back into play this week. I also thought the phrasing was interesting, even at the beginning of this episode, when Hank wants to get him to talk in exchange for a deal, and he just says, not to you. And then they sort of, they went right into Saul coming in, so they sort of like blew past that moment. But I thought that, like, that's something that Hank can probably revisit.
Yeah. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it seems like Jesse has kind of taken matters into his own hands by the time episode ends.
Yeah.
It really all kind of depends on how long for the world pretty much everybody is at this point. I mean, it's like, I feel like kind of all bets are off, essentially.
What do we think about the fact that the premiere sort of takes away a little bit of the wind out of the sails of Jesse throwing gasoline on the house, since we know, obviously, the house is still standing?
Well, I think we're probably going to see some sort of, you know, cold open standoff. Like, you know, Walt's obviously going to come back to the house like seconds after, you know, the credits rolled last night. And there's going to be either a physical altercation or something. I mean, you know, obviously the house was never set ablaze because it just wasn't in that state in the premiere.
But I feel like
the door was knocked off still, I think. So that's going to stay the same.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen in that house from now to the end?
Yeah.
Probably not much. I mean, I think the kids are probably going to be out of there pretty soon.
Yeah.
I just feel like we're in such a place in the season where anything really does seem like it can happen.
Yeah.
And that's one thing now that at least like a little, like some of that suspense is gone because we know that can't happen.
Sure.
Right. Well, how are everyone else's sort of general predictions for who lives and dies changing as the episodes go on, or are they changing? I sort of felt after the premiere, everyone's going to be dead.
Yeah, well,
except Walt.
Yeah.
And, you know, and him right soon. Is anything changing?
You know, I'm still trying to parse, you know, what Vince Gilligan said about the ending still being like kind of a victory for Walt. And I'm trying to figure out how people's expiry dates may play into it and still somehow be a win for Walt. And the only way I can picture it is that in the end, he convinces his family to keep the money.
Right.
And then everything else goes, everything else can go to shit and still be a victory for Walt in his mind. Like his, you know, he has been corrupted and he's sort of this bad guy now. But looking back on the genesis of this as sort of a twisted figure now, he can sort of justify to himself, well, I killed X, Y, and Z, but my family is provided for with the, you know, the storage wars full of locker money. And, you know, they can roll
more
around that and I can
floor.
Die sort of content in my own mind.
Well, the interesting thing is we know from the finale that the Heisenberg news has made it to the public.
Yeah.
So the Heisenberg news has made it to the authorities. And once that happens, there's no way Skylar can keep that money unless she actively like steps into the role of drug kingpin herself. Do you know what I mean? Like there's no way she can like covertly on the sly like take that money unless she drops off the grid entirely.
And
or
at this point she's sort of pot
incredibly
committed,
illegal
she?
Ways to do
well,
it.
She doesn't even know where it is right now, does she?
No,
but we can assume that Walt could tell her at any moment.
I'm actually picturing that made me think of like a Walt and Skylar cook. Like is he gonna train her like he did Todd? Like, can you guys imagine her actually taking the mantle of the
family
empire? But
with the CD this week, I mean, I think maybe Skylar is either pot committed or is going to burn out somehow, right? I mean, she's now in it for the long haul, or she's going to prison, or, you know, something terrible is going to happen to her.
She had her moment last week where she could have gone one way or the other, and she chose.
Yeah, and Hank made that pretty clear at the dinner table.
Yes.
He was like, you too, Skylar, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and she's just not, she's like 20% there. Like, I feel like she's just on lizard brain activity right now and is kind of unresponsive.
Full alpha mode.
So in the diner flashback, you know, the birthday bacon diner flashback from last half season, you know, Jim Beaver gives Walter White the gun, a gun. And that's something that happens in the future. So he needs protection from something.
Right.
So is that then Jesse still being in the wild? And that's his number one concern, is Jesse is still coming after him after everything else he's done. You know,
whatever. I think it's probably Todd and his skinhead uncle, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that cold open trying to say beyond what it was actually saying?
Well, did anybody consider that that might have been in the future?
I thought that at first, too.
Yeah.
That it was.
Well, the diner symmetry seems pointed.
Because
like
we didn't see Todd in the shot in the bathroom, and I thought maybe they had flashed forward and that was his blood that they were wiping off the toe, but then they show him in the next scene, so I didn't think that was it.
Yeah.
But I think we're meant to understand that.
That was so much of a throwaway that clearly, like, that reminded me of the train episode where we see the cold open as the kid on the bike with the tarantula.
Yeah. Right.
And then we forget about it entirely.
That spider's getting a lot of work on this show.
Yeah, really.
He's going to be, unless they can find a spot for him on, like, the pitch.
Yeah.
He's going to be sad when this ends, too.
Yeah. That tarantula sag card. Come
on. But yeah, clearly Todd and his uncle and what's his name from Friday Night Lights and all those things, who I was fairly sure I had recognized last week, but it was.
Yeah. Kirk.
Yeah.
Kevin Rankin.
Dave,
yeah, that's his name. Yes, thank
Dave
you.
Bunting. And aside, that's the Screen Arachnid Guild.
Yes, of course. That's exactly what I meant, obviously.
A leg in every pie.
Let's all remember to support the Screen Arachnid Guild as they negotiate with the producers this year.
Charlotte forever.
I mean, going into these episodes, I felt like the only way it could or should end was with Jesse killing Walt. Which still could happen.
Mm-hmm. God
and
willing.
And then after that first episode, I thought, well, maybe it'll be Hank. And now I sort of think, like, Hank waited too long and fucked up and missed his chance.
No, I think Dave's idea that it could have been just another gang kind of makes sense in the dog sense of it. I mean, it may not be as poetic as some may like, but I think it makes sense in that, you know, you're either in it to win it and your guard is up all the time.
Right.
And when it's not, you're dog food. I mean, I can totally buy that. And then whatever happens in Walter's bubble, in his sphere of influence and his friends and cohorts and former cohorts, that's sort of an aside to the daily grind of the drug business. Well, I can totally see that.
It would scan with what we know about Todd, which is Todd don't give a fuck. Todd will kill anybody.
Yeah.
And the other thing is like there's precedent too for the ending not necessarily being something that's super operatic, because God knows we saw that in The Wire.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Yeah. Omar.
Well, I was just gonna say, from a Wire standpoint, I mean, you know, game don't change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, if Walt's going to, it's like, you play the game long enough, you're going to get got. Kinda. Yep. Yeah. And it's like, just from that standpoint, Walt's a goner one way or the other.
Well, I tell Dave that every day.
Stitch it on a pillow.
Fucking internet.
I think that Walt's attire in the flash forward that we saw at the beginning of this season half, like he's been outdoors. As Bubbles would say, actually.
Yeah.
Like, he's in that stained Henley, and he's been living out of this, like, Ermine Trout-esque mobile. That big caddy. Yeah. And
he looks feral.
He's been in it.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of theories floating around online about how Walt takes on some of the attributes of people he's killed.
Yeah. Right.
We saw that last week when he laid down the towel, like Gus Fring did, and the way he dealt with the customer at the car wash. In that first flash forward, he's wearing pretty much Jesse's army jacket. And I mean, you know, if that is to be believed, which, you know, that could just be sort of a design thing, or it could be, you know,
a fake out.
Yeah, it could be a fake out, just sort of like the, like I think the Saul Goodman spinoff is.
You know, I was thinking that too, especially when Jesse stormed the office. I was like, that was quite a ruse if they end up killing Saul, or the Saul thing becomes like Tales of Saul in the past or whatever. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be going forward. Tales of Saul, time traveler.
I mean, I think it'd be pretty awesome if Saul, you know,
oh my God,
gets sent to Belize.
Oh my God,
Saul is the new doctor. The Peter Capaldi thing was the fake out.
Or he wakes up, it starts with him floating face down in the pool like the teddy bear, and it's Salset Boulevard, and he just narrates the whole thing. Call me AMC.
I was going to say, call us all AMC. We've each got an idea to pitch.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mine's right. Animated. That's a nice segue,
sure,
I would say, to AMC's future plans, which, based on the stuff they've been rolling out recently, I, I mean,
not so great.
Not great.
It's an interesting, you know, progression, because, you know, in my mind, AMC, you know, they were nothing, and then they struck gold with Mad Men, and then they sort of became this HBO of basic cable, where they were producing, you know, niche quality shows and seemed to be behind them, you know, willing to support them longer than, say, a network would. And then I got the feeling that somebody said, man, we're really kicking ass. We should fill out our schedule while we have momentum. And they decided to fill out their schedule with all these weird, you know, sort of TBS-esque shows like Small Town Security and Showville and Owner's Manual and these sort of like...
Yeah,
yeah, and like not brand specific. Like Owner's Manual felt kind of spike-y Showville was super boring and felt kind of TLC-y. And it's like, okay, fill out your schedule, but not with other networks rejects.
Like, yeah, because I felt AMC had a really strong brand up until last year. You know, you say that, and I agree,
but what you forget is like the shows that people consider to be part of AMC's strong brand are like three shows. Like there's Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and Walking Dead, and everything else has sort of been like sketched
in. I realize that, but I'm saying like it's... I think it's a byproduct of them deciding that they can be a big player in the network scene if they fill out their schedule or, you know, whatever they're thinking.
Right.
And then instead of...
And those... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, instead of, you know, adding three more shows that, you know, would be a, you know, expensive kind of scripted things, they added whatever, six or seven or whatever they got going on.
Yeah.
And they're all sort of like throwaways. I mean, they're not... Some of these are not terrible shows, but they're not what you wanted AMC to be.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Low Winter Sun. I mean, from the commercials, it looks, I guess, kind of cinematic, and like it looks like it's well shot and high
production
value.
It's at least of a type of with their big dramas.
Yeah, which is like, I mean, that's, you know, the big three, you know, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and Walking Dead. Those are sort of, those definitely comprise a pretty big piece of the AMC creative pie, I guess. But it's like, it seems to me like they should be sort of throwing their hat in with shows like that more.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of surprising that, you know, these other sort of like less, I guess, more budgety type of shows. It's weird that they would greenlight those when Dave's right. They definitely had a pretty strong brand building around those other ones.
Well, the thing with Low Winter Sun is it's like all tone.
Yeah.
No actual music. Like, I don't know how else to put it, but it's like they went for darkness TM.
Yeah.
Like, everything is shot like through, you know, an ashtray, and they have some pretty heavy hitter actors, but you realize that like you've seen this before. It's not done particularly well.
It's sort of like when Batman talks, but it's the show.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
It's Low Winter Sun.
We're done.
Well, I think one thing is the success of Walking Dead changed things in a way that, because it was a bigger rating success than their more respected shows, and it also opened them up to an audience that wasn't quite the audience that was watching Mad Men.
Yeah.
And they've sort of they're pushing things in more genre directions, I think, that way. I think you see that obviously with like Talking Dead and that whole thing. The other thing, though, is that if we're talking about like an HBO comparison, HBO has in the past been more over the map than they are now, where we sort of forget things like Mind of the Married Man or like G-String Divas or something like that, even though I'm fairly certain they still rerun old G-String Divas.
Oh, yeah, like Taxi Cab Confessions or whatever, season 288.
Where like HBO's brand, which is fairly well-defined now, still... There are so many things that existed and still kind of do exist outside of that, that I wonder if AMC is able to either, you know, refine that brand again or just find more successful shows that allow it to diversify the brand. Like, they're these small little, you know, Small Time Security or whatever shows are going to be forgotten or forgiven or just sort of easily pushed aside.
Well, and that this happened to HBO as well.
Yeah.
5 or 6 years ago, that like a bunch of prestige shows ended that made HBO HBO.
Right. Carnival didn't work, and then things
and then
sort
John
of
from
spiraled.
Cincinnati, and then everyone's like, you know, is this the end of HBO? Like, well, no.
I'm forever going to be mad at John in Cincinnati for killing Deadwood.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That was David Milch's wandering, whatever, wandering eye.
Yeah.
That was such a piece of shit.
It was.
It really was.
I watched so every episode of the movie by the end.
That's why we're still mad.
Every episode is like, am I just not getting the brilliance of this? Or is it just really weird and boring?
Well, one thing I can say for it is it gave us the phrase dump out, which it sure did.
Yeah. True.
But Sarah, you were saying the other day that you felt like Sundance is eating AMC's lunch when it comes to this sort of programming.
I think it is, because here's the thing, and I said this, I wrote a piece about Low Winter Sun and how long I lasted into the series premiere, which was 2 minutes, because that redonk-a-donk speech about morality being like a strobe light, that I was like, it's nothing like a fucking strobe light.
Reality's like a strobe light. Writers.
Also, I killed Commissioner Gordon. Yeah, of course he did. Like, drowned him in his own car. Good for you. And the actor really tried to sell it, but I was like, why... why is this such a bummer that this show isn't working for me? Because I really like Mark Strong is great. I expected better things from it, but I thought it was a Sundance show.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a Sundance show. It looked like a Sundance show. And they've been doing so well with Rectify, which was like kind of slow and weird and actually maybe a little Milchy.
Rectify was so good.
I'd say that as someone who doesn't like Milch. I was that one who was like, Deadwood, not for me. Top of the Lake was amazing. I mean, it was like weird and over the top in a lot of ways, but it ended in however many episodes. And I don't know, like they're doing the things that AMC used to do. And I think AMC is being a little safe, honestly. Yeah. Like Low Winter Sun feels like bet hedging. Like if you liked The Shield and The Sopranos and other things that happen to air on Sundays at 10 o'clock, you'll like this. Like, well, okay, but that's not the creative basis, I don't think, for a good show that really gets people talking about it. It just felt like by numbers.
Yeah.
Feels like there's another discussion to be had at some point about why American broadcasters can't get long-form crime procedurals right. Because it happened with The Killing. That was sort of the first, you know, high profile one. But like the difference between something like The Killing American version and Top of the Lake, which is the same sort of thing where it's like you introduce an ecosystem and then the crime happens. And it's like you look at it from, you know, however many angles of all the citizens in the town. Like that worked so beautifully. Like why can't we do it the same way that the Danes and the British and everyone else do it? I don't know the answer.
Some of it is a willingness to discard sets, characters, locations, I think. I mean, I think this might be more of a network problem, but say like The Killing, at least the Danish version, there's some turnover going on. That's all I'll say. And that sort of refreshes each one. A bit like in the Law and Order-esque sense of it, but they inject meaning into characters leaving and coming and going. Whereas Law and Order, it's like, well, Dick Wolf got sick of you, so now you're flying back to your home planet.
It's because you're a lesbian.
Yeah, exactly. So there might be hope on the AMC horizon. Just looking at what they have in development, and they have much more scripted in development than they do unscripted, probably by like a 2 and a 2.5 ratio. But some of them are kind of out there. So I'll read some of them to you guys. Sight Unseen, and you tell me what you think. All right. AMC script development. Ballistic City, a futuristic drama. Ballistic City is the story of a former cop. This is not Century City. It's the story of a former cop thrust into the criminal underworld of a city house in a generational starship destined for an unknown world.
No.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, it's real. These are in development. May not be pilots. They're just scripts. King.
That is Bunting Kryptonite.
In the early 1960s, Floridian King Carmichael sells his soul to a corrupt racist political machine to win a seat in the Senate. Having run as a segregationist, he is then tapped by Johnson to champion civil rights in the South.
I would watch that.
I would too.
It could be horrible, but well, I would
try it. It could get House of Cardsy, but...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It could get after school specialsy too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't really know how much staying power the concept itself is going to have necessarily.
But it's interesting enough.
Yeah.
Ashland, set in 1950 in Ashland, a tiny mining town in Kentucky. Kentucky's so hot, you guys. The Evans family has just relocated from California, and the matriarch Dell must hide her family's secret and find a way to support her three children at the height of the Red Scare.
Yeah, depends on what the secret is.
That the communists,
they cast as the lead.
And also stop commissioning things where you can reuse the costumes from Mad Men. Period drama.
No, well, that's the thing. It's like, are they just trying to pigeonhole themselves as like the period network? I mean, it's, you know.
I mean, they're good at that, but you got to, you know. It's,
sure.
It's the writing, stupid.
Yeah. Well, it's the entire production team, stupid. I mean, you know, Mad Men is Mad Men for a reason. You know, I mean, their set designers are amazing. They're, you know. It really depends on who's working on it.
And is that going to be just Winter's Bone weekly? And what is this? What is the secret that they're the Dollengangers from V.C. Andrews? Like, I don't, that I'll watch.
White City is a drama that follows Western diplomats and journalists living in Afghanistan. I believe White City is probably like the name of the base or something like that.
Probably.
Wait, is that scripted or unscripted?
These are all scripted.
Okay.
There's untitled Davi Waller Project.
I love his glasses.
Set against the New York automobile industry of the 1920s, two brothers struggle to keep their family-run company afloat.
Again?
Nope.
You're going to have like a run-in with Tucker, the man in his car.
Or Nucky Thompson, the man in his teeth.
Yeah, it'd be kind of awesome if they actually greenlit a show that was just crossover television events with other series from other networks. I would do.
Here's one that
seems... Once again, Saul Goodman time traveler solves all problems.
Well, speaking to that point, I'll skip one.
Time lawyer.
The Wall, 1960s Berlin. An American businessman becomes embroiled in a web of East-West espionage. And then there's a few unscripted.
I was afraid that was going to become like a, you know, a serialized version of Pink Floyd's The Wall, in which case, no.
I would hate watch that.
You know, I took this teaching job, but nobody appreciates me. Unscripted development. Oh, God. They're doing All-Star Celebrity Bowling as a TV show.
Wow.
Wait, AMC, the network, is doing All-Star Celebrity Bowling.
I'm sorry, I'll watch it.
I was just yesterday saying
I miss Celebrity Poker Showdown, so I will absolutely watch Celebrity Bowling.
Let me ask you this, Dave, because you have it up.
Yeah.
Is Chris Hardwick involved in this in any way?
Yeah, he created it.
Yeah. So that this jumps off from a web series that he did. Yeah. Also, Chris Hardwick's father is a professional bowler, so that's why this is happening. Because AMC wants to be in the Chris Hardwick business. Yeah. Yes,
well, he's
that
only
is
got
true.
Five more Talking Bad left, so gotta do something.
Right, so that's what's on the slate from AMC in the near future. So who knows?
I'll only watch that if it's shot in 35mm, though.
Dave, I think there's something to your theory that they are just looking to, you know, corner the market on decade-inspired dramas, by the looks of it. You know. Yeah. All right. So, AMC, best of luck to you in the future.
Yeah. Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I, Dave Cole, am not a crackpot, but the usually tedious blue-collar job reality shows could be quite watchable if re-edited for an Adult Swim 11-minute format. The networks involved, which are like A&E, History, probably Discovery. These are the people that are making shows like Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers, Axemen, Storm Chasers,
Duck Dynasty,
Gold Rush Alaska, LA Inc., Pawn Stars, American Pickers, Storage Wars, and the big one, Duck Dynasty. They take all these shows, which are just shitty with filler. They edit them down into a tight 11 minutes of
T-shirt,
quirky characters, odd situations, dispense with all the obvious staff written jokes that they are trying to pull off and not understanding them, put them in a 2-hour block on Friday or Saturday night at midnight. Profit. I am not a crackpot.
Seconded.
This is the Tiny Triumph section where I get to talk about my tiny triumph of the week. I spent the entire week last week in Austin, Texas, which is a lovely town. And on the flight back, I was sort of in my own iPad zone, just trying not to focus on the fact that I was in a tube in the sky. And my lovely wife, Sam, had to visit the restroom, and she had to wait behind a gentleman who turned out to be Giancarlo Esposito, also known as Gus Fring from Breaking Bad.
Nice.
Tara fan self.
Oh my God, so awesome.
We both had the vapors the rest of the flight. I didn't really know how to approach him because I'm pretty awful at approaching celebrities. And living in New York, you tend to want to be too cool, you know, and you don't want to acknowledge their existence. But, you know, of course, we were flying first class, which is a rarity. And by that, I mean, we never do it. When the plane landed and we got to the gate, you know, everybody does the thing where they stand up and then wait for them to open the door. So everything's super crowded unnecessarily. And of course, somebody else was like, "Hey, you're the guy from Breaking Bad," or whatever. And we were like, "Oh, okay, it's totally him." I tried sneaking a picture of him with my phone on the plane, and then like the flash went off. I was like, "Shit!" I was like the most douchey.
All of the nightmares.
His face blew off.
As they opened up the door, finally we started getting off the plane, and you know, I was like, "Hey, man, I'm a really big fan. You know, I think you're really good." And he ended up just walking with Sam and I to the. Sorry, it was Sam and me, to the gate, to the baggage claim where he was going to meet his driver, and we got to chat with him for about 10 minutes, and he was actually super awesome.
That's a great...
That was my tiny triumph.
That's a really great sign. Yeah.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. I'm Matt Siegel from Tampa, Florida, and my submission to the Extra Hot Great canon is episode 14 from season 3 of Futurama, Time Keeps on Slippin'. It is my favorite Futurama episode, and in my opinion, one of the funniest half hours ever broadcast on TV. The episode begins with a fairly standard science fiction send-up, the aliens who threaten to invade Earth. However, this time the aliens are from the Globetrotter homeworld and merely want to humiliate Earth in a game of basketball.
Pitiful ball players of Earth, I am Ethan Bubblegum Tate, commander of the Harlem Globetrotters. For generations, your puny planet has lived in peace with the Globetrotter homeworld. But now, for no reason, we challenge you to defend your honor on the basketball court. Will no one meet our challenge? Have none of you pathetic Earthlings game?
What happens if we lose?
Nothing. There's nothing at stake and no threat beyond the shame of defeat.
This will not stand. I'll take you on, you airballing bozos.
You old man? Sweet Clyde, laugh derisively at him.
The professor really doesn't cotton to this and decides to challenge them with a team of atomic supermen. The only problem is that the supermen are currently just super babies. The Planet Express crew then go and use sci-fi to collect chronotons to make the super babies grow up. Once they do that, we get to see an amazing Space Jams parody where the Superman and Globetrotters compete.
Superman lead 45-42. Arachneon with the steal to Thorias. Thorias from downtown. Yes! He's really showing us what a man with a cannon in his chest can do.
I have to say that if the episode was just the Space Jam stuff, it would still probably be my favorite episode. The send-up of Globetrotter shenanigans and Atomic Superman playing basketball is pitch-perfect, and literally every line from Marv Albert's head is gold in how unfazed he is by the proceedings. Luckily for the viewer, the episode doesn't just settle. It turns out that the chronoton removal is causing the entire universe to begin losing time. While it means apocalypse for the people in the show, it basically means that the writers have free rein to make every single line either a punchline or a setup to a punchline. And the rapid-fire nature and consistent quality of the jokes is amazing. You get Gilligan cuts where characters say they won't ever do something and then end up doing them.
The time skips are worse than ever now. Isolated spots are jumping by years at a time. Look!
Stupid senior citizens! Why should we have to pay for their social security benefits?
I deserve free money!
Characters proving their hypocrisy with the instantaneous passages of time, rapid-fire montages, and even great non-sequiturs like Hermes' conga line. Threaded throughout these quick hits are runners like Bender's insistent need on becoming a Globetrotter.
Please, please let me come with you. I can make myself taller.
Bender, you can talk trash. You can handle the ball. But look in your heart and ask yourself, are you funky enough to be a Globetrotter? Are you?
Yes.
Are you?
I mean, with time, my funk level could...
Are you?
No.
And a Fry and Leela romance story that actually isn't cloying.
You tricked me into marrying you, didn't you?
Of course not.
How'd you do it? Drugs and the champagne? Hypnosis?
No. Drugs are for losers, and hypnosis is for losers with big weird eyebrows. I don't know what amazing thing I did to make you love me, but whatever it was, we're married now. We've got the rest of our lives to work.
Divorce is final.
What?
Well, let's divide up the china. I guess I'll take the NFC helmets, and you can have the AFC helmets.
Fine. Break my heart again.
In addition to the great structure of the episode, it also has some of the best one-liners in comedy history. I've already praised Marv Albert's contributions, but this is also the episode where we learned that we all still have Zoidberg.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Fry. You lost the woman of your dreams, but you still have Zoidberg. You all still have Zoidberg.
And that no one cares what Hermes' promiscuous mother thinks.
I don't know what you did, Fry, but once again, you screwed up. Now all the planets are going to start cracking wise about our mamas.
I'm just glad my fat, ugly mama isn't alive to see this day.
Enough about your promiscuous mother, Hermes.
For these reasons, I believe that Futurama's Time Keeps on Slipping deserves a spot in the Extra Hot Gray Canon. I love the podcast, and I wanted to thank you all for bringing it back.
Thank you, Matt, for the contribution. This is my second favorite episode of Futurama. The first favorite, which I'm sure will come up at some point in the future, is the one where Fry gets worms.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yo.
But this is an excellent second. Bubblegum Tate is one of my favorite one or two or three off characters mm-hmm. from Futurama for all the obvious reasons. And he's right. Matt is right when he says that if it was only the basketball plot line, it would still be great. I like the wrinkle that after the basketball stuff stops and the time skip stuff starts when we learn that he's Bubblegum is a physics professor on the Globetrotter homeworld.
Yeah.
And he lets us know the difference between real math and just razzmatazz.
Yes. You know, I always save the real stuff for the end of the game. Yeah.
Yes. And there's no point going over it because a lot of the jokes are visual, but it's true that it's really hard for the show to do a Fry and Leela storyline that a love plot line that isn't really annoying. This one does it by just skipping around randomly. And what I love about this episode is that it has the writers taking advantage of the format of the show in terms of like nothing matters, let's just do whatever the fuck we want, and it actually works great.
It gels,
yes,
really well. I would say this, the love story does get a little cloying at the end.
Agree.
I think that's,
and at the beginning
it's a little bit of a bummer that it does end on a genuinely bum-tastic note. But the ending, you know, I would quibble with his notion that it is not cloying. I think it is at the end. The middle parts are great. You know, I love that they can just, as you say, fuck it, skip this part, let's do that part. Economically, the story covers a lot of ground very well because they can just zip here, zip there.
I was impressed by, it's sort of an example of if you have confidence and you're like in your own universe of your world on your show, that once you know those rules thoroughly, you can twist them around and it still totally works, even though maybe it shouldn't. And there's like there's a bunch of little meta references to that. Like, you know, they cut to the professor like straddling a rocket. And he's like, off we go, apparently. I love that. And I also like the running thing with Zoidberg. Like, I just think that, you know, I don't know who voices him, but just that sort of nasal, like, Zoidberg, and then he's waving his claw, like, I was dying. And
Billy
the mournful
West,
whistling of the Globetrotters theme, like, as usual, with Graining Project, it's like the little things that I love the best, and it was chock full of those little things that I would just pause it and be like, that existed.
Yeah,
that
I
joke
like,
was awesome.
I like Matthew's explanation, and it is true in that sort of don't give a crap kind of way, that they use sci-fi to do X, which is true. I mean, that's a perfect
because
way to put
that's
it.
That's what sci-fi is for.
It's, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
It's the space version of a wizard did it. I'm really interested in what Joe has to say for this, because me and Tara have been trying to get Joe. Well, we gave up a couple of years ago, but for
you
a long time,
we
were trying to get Joe on board with Futurama.
Because you're quitters.
Well, I think the reason why we kind of gave up a couple of years ago is that's when Futurama came back, and it kind of came back as a ghost.
Came back wrong.
It came back wrong.
is better.
The first run has a lot of good stuff in it, and this is probably my favorite episode. But Joe, I'm really curious what your take on this was.
Yeah, it's Matt made a very, very impassioned case, and I hate the fact that somebody can sort of lay all their love for a show out on the line, and then my observation is just like, it still doesn't work for me, and I kind of don't know why. But I liked the idea of the Globetrotter home planet is a fantastically funny idea. And I like that they were just sort of like, no, let's spin off from that into whatever. And I like absurdist comedy, and I like sort of throwing whatever you want to throw at a theme and see what sticks. And I think that's good. I just think that it all hangs together so loosely for me that there's never anything for me to grab onto. And I also feel like, and this is a me specific thing, so whatever, but I've tried to enter Futurama from so many weird angles at weird times. So it's like, I never know when in the chronology I'm watching anything. And Leela and Fry stuff never makes any sense because of that, where I never quite know what has happened previously to the whatever given episode I'm watching. So it's sort of led me to tune out everything about those two.
I will say the Fry and Leela overall arc is sort of like, it's on a line moving towards them getting together. But on that line, they go through like an absolute breakup to like, it's really weird. Like, so even if you watch them in order, you may be just as confused. Like, they didn't really handle the progression over the series of that really well. And I think when they rebooted it, they sort of just said, okay, now they're going to be together. And so if you watch the newer ones, which aren't that good, then they're sort of like a couple. But the older ones, you never know what's going on with them. And it's sort of like, in one case, I don't really care, because as a shipping opportunity, I don't really care too much about that. But it is kind of confusing for you to come into it.
I have a Zoidberg question, though, because it seems like every time I watch an episode, I love Zoidberg so much, and I always want more Zoidberg. And I wonder if that's a problem, or whether like that's the ideal Zoidberg, in that more Zoidberg would be too much.
Let me ask you,
and
this,
that I'm getting the right amount by wanting more. It's like better than wanting less.
Did you really like the Jerry-centric episodes of Parks and Recreation? Did you find those to be your favorites?
Because
is Jerry, and Jerry is Zoidberg.
Gotcha.
There are a few. I think the Zoidberg-centric episodes are pretty good. The one where he goes back to his homeworld for the mating thing, and they have Kreplach.
Yeah.
That one is funny.
Yeah.
That one is funny.
But they don't do him too much. And there's also the one where he heads up the invasion force after Freedom Day.
Right.
Which is a mixed bag.
And our guest. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
Oh, I just was going to say, Sportsy has an observation. in that, and you played the one clip of it, the guy with the cannon in his chest that shoots the basket, and that is played as all the mutants are played, as if that is a super special advantage for him. But I'm going to say this, trying to shoot a basketball into a hoop from a cannon seems to be way harder than trying to shoot a basketball in a hoop with your hands. So I say that guy is actually working at a disadvantage and should probably be given more credit than he is.
I really wish that mutant, sentence Joe. Ended with, and that's when I turned it off.
And that's when I checked out of this episode for good.
That's also a very comic Connie kind of, you know, like, it's clear to me that the trajectory of the basketball would clearly decimate the entire basket. How did he make the basket?
I sure hope somebody was fired for that blunder.
Yeah.
Dave, any last parting thoughts before we put Time Keeps on Slipping to a vote?
I agree that the Worms episode is slightly superior, but that is also another episode where there is a cloying Leela and Fry storyline. And the Slurm episode will always have a special place in my heart.
Love the Slurm one.
Yeah, that one's just like, you know, Fry just keeps drinking it. It's so good. But I accept this one. This is definitely high up there. It's a good one.
All right. So I say let's vote on this. Let's start with Joe. Joe, what vote
Joe's
you?
Joe's a no.
Sarah?
Yes.
Tara?
Yes.
And completing the majority, Dave does not have a vote, but we appreciate your input, Dave.
Well, I'll say yes anyways.
All right. Dave says yes, and I go where Dave goes. I say yes, too. All right, Futurama. Time Keeps on Slipping from Season 3. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Good job.
And
a better way to celebrate our success than by me showing Bubblegum the Globetrotter uniform I made myself.
Let me see. Hello, lawsuit.
American's Bubble Winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. And Tara, you have our winner.
Winner of the week is L. Frank Baum. He's so hot right now. He's the bomb. He's the creator of the Wizard of Oz.
Boo.
I will leave. I will walk out of here. So now I had thought there were only two shows in development for TV based on the Wizard of Oz series of children's books. It's actually three, because I guess everybody has figured out from the success of Once Upon a Time the value of building brands around public domain properties.
Cheap public domain properties.
So here are the Wizard of Oz products that are projects that may be coming down the pike if all of them get picked up. There's Emerald City from the creators of Dave, guess what? Siberia. Oh, so that's going to be on NBC, and that's supposed to be a Game of Thrones style dark reimagining of the Wizard of Oz stories based more on the books.
So who fucks Toto?
Everyone. Toto pulls
the man, get away from my dog.
Speaking of boo. I was saying boo earns.
That's bullshit.
So then there's also CBS's Dorothy, which is a medical soap inspired by the characters and themes of The Wizard of Oz.
And what?
Prior to that, Sci-Fi picked up for development, I'm reading this off Deadline, a miniseries titled Warriors of Oz, and that comes from Timur Bekmambetov of Wanted fame, and that's a fantasy action reimagining of the classic story. Even though didn't Sci-Fi, I'm saying this rhetorically because yes, they did already do a mini series reimagining of The Wizard of Oz called Tin Man
with Zooey Deschanel. Yeah,
yes. So enough
already. Timur Bekmambetov did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter also. Hey. So you'll remember that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's called The Warriors of Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Is it just about the monkeys? Because aren't they the kind of only like actual army or
who knows?
Monkeys versus Munchkins. Here we go.
Yeah, nice. Now that I would
better
watch.
Title. Yeah.
And our loser of the week.
Well, loser of the week also a famous author, Stephen King, only because his novel The Stand was due for a feature film version, an update of the ABC miniseries that I loved, but also does not stand up to the test of time. And it was going to be directed by Ben Affleck, but since Ben Affleck has decided that he is an awesome actor somehow, is going to star in Batman, and you may have heard that on your local internet. So once again, The Stand seems to be going into turnaround, although they talked about Scott Cooper, the director of Crazy Heart, directing it, which seems odd, but okay. But right now, we'll be seeing less movie version of The Stand in our future.
So. Joe, when did you watch The Stand last?
Oh, probably like late 90s, early 2000s. Oh,
okay, all right. And as you said, it didn't hold up. I'm just curious if the opening holds up, because I just remember the opening being fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that was great. To the montage to cult. Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Awesome. Like, yeah, that's all good. I mean, I honestly, of its time, the standards of its time, it was actually really good. It's just very clearly a mid-90s
of its time.
Network miniseries, that, like, with all its limitations, and Molly Ringwald.
Ooh, well, one more question. You guys know what time it is?
I think so.
It's game time.
All right.
Wow.
Yay, Dave sings it again.
All right, everybody.
My favorite thing is when Dave would sing, it is game time now.
This is the second game time of the season. Joe has the only point so far with his victory last week. This week, we are playing a game from Travis Nelson called Who and Where in the USA Am I Now? For his excellent contribution, Travis earns himself one extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing. Extra hot great minis start this week, people. Get ready. In Who and Where in the U.S. Am I Now, I am going to describe three places that characters played by a single actor have lived. You're going to tell me the actor for 1 point and the state their character in an ongoing show is from. Here's an example. It is actually quite simple. I went to a gritty police department in Baltimore, to my father's car dealership in Los Angeles, to a nuclear submarine somewhere in Indian Ocean. Who and where in the U.S. am I now? Anybody know who that actor is?
Andre Brower.
And the shows involved are, this is for your information, Homicide: Life on the Street is the gritty police department in Baltimore. Men of a Certain Age is the father's car dealership in Los Angeles. And, oh, I'm so sorry, I got canceled. Last Resort is the nuclear submarine in the ocean. That was the stupidest show. I love that show. It was so dumb. And where in the U.S. am I now? Where you're looking just for the state. That's all you have to provide.
New York. Okay.
And why is he in New York?
Because he's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That is correct. So the two pieces of information for the points would be Andre Brower and New York.
Okay.
Okay.
Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes, gotcha. It does. Yes.
All right. Joe is going first. Here is our first question. Joe, there's 28 questions, by the way. I went from the mayor's office in New York City to the principal's office in Dillon, Texas, to a terrifying murder house in Los Angeles. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
All right. So the actor is Connie Britton. And the state is the state of Tennessee.
And the show, just for everybody's interest?
Nashville.
Nashville, right. Mayor's office in Spin City to Friday Night Lights to American Horror Story. Okay, our next question. I went from a police department... Oh, wait. Yeah, I went from a police department in Baltimore, Maryland, to a fast food joint in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to a newspaper office in Storybrook, Maine. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Dave Bunting.
I bet you know one of those.
Fast food joint? Is it Giancarlo Esposito? I don't know.
Correct. Ooh. And where in the U.S. is he now? While you're thinking about that, the police department was Homicide: Life on the Street, and the fast food Albuquerque Breaking Bad, and Storybrooke, Maine, Once Upon a Time. Where is Giancarlo Esposito now?
I believe he's in Austin, Texas.
Texas, you say?
Last I checked.
Well, Dave, that was a free point for you, because the answer is the United States from Revolution. Accept any state are my instructions.
Ah.
Okay. Well done. Good.
I went from a women-only apartment in New York City to an inn full of weirdos in Vermont to a home science lab in Matheson, Colorado. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
I am Peter Scolari.
Correct.
Used to be on Bosom Buddies and Newhart. And the third one, I will find out with everyone else. Where in the U.S. am I now? Well, I'm damned if I know, but I'm going to guess Massachusetts. Because fuck it. Okay.
I think I know.
Take a shot.
Is he in Michigan?
He is in Michigan from the show Girls.
Girls, and yeah.
Science lab in Colorado was from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV show.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Hey, alrighty.
Man's gotta eat.
I went from a paleontology department in New York City to a counterterrorism unit in Los Angeles to a ghostly antique shop in Grandview, New York. Who and where in the U.S. am I now? Tara.
Oh, I thought I knew it, and then I did not know it.
What's your
paleontology department, I thought that was Ross, but he was never on 24 that I know of. I'll just say Kiefer Sutherland, because I don't know. Shit.
Aisha Tyler.
Everyone has such a boner for Aisha Tyler all of a sudden.
Went from Friends to 24, as you were saying, and then to The Ghost Whisperer.
Sure.
And is now in New York for Archer or California for Whose Line Is It Anyway and The Talk.
All right.
I was going to say The Talk, yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I went from a department store in Cleveland, Ohio, to an unusual high school in Exclamation, USA, to a teaching hospital named Scarlet Heart. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Okay, first one is department store in Cleveland.
Correct.
Which I think is the Drew Carey show. Second one is...
Exclamation USA. Went to a high school in Exclamation USA.
Uh-huh, no idea. Third one is...
A teaching hospital named Sacred Heart.
Okay, which is Scrubs. Okay. Oh, you're Krista Miller.
Noise.
Correct.
And right now,
what state?
She's on Cougar Town, which is in the great state of Florida.
Correct.
Nicely well, done. Great is pushing it, but whatever.
So. The state.
Great in size.
I went
the existing state of Florida.
I went from a magazine office in San Francisco to a mysterious island somewhere in the Pacific to FBI offices in New York City and Wyoming. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh, God. The only one I know is Lost. All right, is it Matthew Fox? No.
Magazine office in San Francisco from Suddenly Susan, Lost, and then to Ringer, where he played FBI officers, I'm sorry. We are talking about Nestor Carbonelli.
Oh, sure.
And he now resides in Oregon at the Bates Motel.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I went from a lavish ranch in Dallas, Texas, to a house full of children in Port Washington, Wisconsin, to a soapy locale in Los Angeles, California. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Well, gee, I don't know why I keep getting this show, too, because it was last week. I'm Patrick Duffy, I'm pretty sure, and I think I'm back in Texas.
Correct. Yeah. Dallas, step by step, the bold and the beautiful, and now back on Dallas the Reboot.
I forgot he was on Bold.
He was on Bold.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very recently.
I want
very
to
recently.
Leave here now. That's awesome.
I went from a Civil War battlefield to a wacky playhouse in Puppetland to a high-tech crime lab in Las Vegas. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Now, you are Lawrence Fishburne, and you are now in Maryland.
Virginia or DC or Hannibal.
They're in Maryland all the time.
Well, I think it's time for that's bullshit sound cue.
Well, first of all, they're in Toronto. So let's just get that out of the way.
If you guys think Maryland's an acceptable answer.
No, it's fine. I trust this a bitter.
Civil War, the series, the miniseries, to Pee-wee's Playhouse, to CSI, and now Hannibal. I went from a PI's office in Neptune, California, to a mysterious company in a mysterious location, to a gossipy high school in New York City. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Okay, Neptune is Veronica Mars. What's the second one?
A mysterious company in a mysterious location.
Right, because she was on Heroes, I believe, briefly.
And a gossipy high school in New York City.
That would be Gossip Girl. What is Kristen Bell doing now?
Oh.
Kristen Bell, doy.
The show no one watches or cares about.
Well, remember, Joe, you just have to give me a state, so you can always just, you know, if you don't know the show.
I was going
to
say, I
can
just like throw
chance.
A guess and be like California. Nice.
I think there California should be all of your default guesses because of just how many shows take place in California. The show in question, and you're right about all the other shows, Joe, the show in question is House of Lies.
Oh, right.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I went from a hardware store in Deadwood, not yet South Dakota, to visiting Hughes and Associates Law Firm in New York City, to visiting an altogether unremarkable office in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Well, I am Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, you are.
But I'm actually not.
Where am I now? What state?
I'm not sure where I am now. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one. Kentucky.
Correct.
We're going to give you that.
Fucking serious? Yes.
It justifies
Timothy.
Oh, I had no idea. I watched the pilot and I didn't follow up.
Off with his pants. With his pants. I went from a small home in Rome, Wisconsin, to the residential quarters of the White House, to a police department in Lake Top, New Zealand. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh my gosh. I am Elizabeth Moss, and right now I'm in New York, no?
Correct. She was on picket fences in Rome, Wisconsin.
Oh my
she
God.
Was in the West Wing and Top of the Lake in New Zealand, now on Mad Men in New York. Okay. I went from the Oswald State Penitentiary in New York to an ill-gotten home in North Cadwell, New Jersey, to visiting a skyscraper on Rockefeller Plaza. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
You're Dean Winters?
Nope. Incorrect. I am, in fact, Edie Falco.
Edie Falco.
From Oz, and then The Sopranos, and then 30 Rock. And I currently live in New York on Nurse Jackie. We are one third through our game. Can we have a score tally, please, Tara?
I have one proud lonely point. Dave B has 4, Sarah has 5, Joe has 6.
All right. I went from an ugly yellow sofa in a suburb of Chicago to a rural-filled house in Detroit, Michigan, to a shipping hangar in New York City. Sorry, to a shipping hangar in New New York City. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
I don't know any of these.
I went from an ugly yellow sofa in a suburb of Chicago to a rural-filled house in Detroit, Michigan, to a shipping hangar in New New York City.
Okay, the second one, rural-filled, makes me think it's 8 Simple Rules. New New York City is a show I don't watch. I'm going to guess Katie Sagal. Okay. And so she's on Sons of Anarchy, which takes place in California.
Nice. California again.
Anybody want to tell Joe what show New York City is from?
Oh, joy.
Futurama.
Of course.
The show has involved ugly yellow sofa. Now that you know, Joe, what was that show?
Married with Children.
That's right. 8 Simple Rules was correct, then Futurama. All right. I went from an eccentric radio station in New York City to the drug-filled Dewdrop Inn in West Baltimore, Maryland, to a well-lit morgue in Miami. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh, Jesus. Can I have the first one again, please?
An eccentric radio station in New York City.
And the second one.
I bet I know what comes after the second one. Drug-filled Dewdrop Inn, West Baltimore, Maryland. And then the third one, Dave, because I'm anticipating your needs. A well-lit morgue in Miami.
Michael K. Williams?
The answer, news radio, The Coroner, CSI Miami, Candy Alexander.
Candy Alexander.
Now residing in Louisiana on Treme.
I've literally never heard that name before in my life.
You would know her face.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
I went from the vice president's office to a cul-de-sac on Wisteria Lane to a home ballistics lab in Chicago, where I still reside part-time. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Could I have that first one again, please?
I went from the vice president's office to a cul-de-sac on Wisteria Lane to a home ballistics lab in Chicago.
I think I'm Felicity Huffman.
You
and
are.
I don't know where I live.
Gary Cole, from the West Wing, Desperate Housewives, and currently part time on The Good Wife. And you live in Washington D.C., technically not a state, but we're going to let it slide on Veep.
Okay,
right.
I went from Bayside High School and Malibu Sands Beach Club to the generically named California University to an entirely different generically named California University. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Mark Paul Gosselaar?
Incorrect. Tiffany Thiessen. Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Bell of the College Years. And Beverly Hills 90210 for Shame Tara Ariano. She currently lives in New York on White Collar. I went from a guest house in Hawaii to hanging out with my girlfriend in her impossibly large New York apartment to the Montecito Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
First one's Hawaii. Okay. First one's Hawaii, which I think is Magnum P.I. Second one is
impossibly large New York apartment.
Right, friends. Okay, so Tom Selleck.
And where does he currently live?
Oh, God. It's a good thing I don't need to name the title of the show because I can never do it. But it's that cop show that's in New York City.
He does live in New York on the show Blue Bloods. Rookie Blue or whatever the other one is.
Right.
I went from a pizza place in Boston to a spaceship called Serenity to living briefly in a cul-de-sac on Wisteria Lane. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh, God. Nathan Fillion.
Where do I live now, Dave?
Oh, God.
Two guys and a girl and a pizza place, Firefly, Desperate Housewives, and then...
And, I don't know, New York.
Yep, correct.
Nice.
On Castle.
Castle.
Oh, Bert.
I went from a friendly bar in Boston to a small medical practice in the Bronx to hanging out with an acerbic friend in Los Angeles. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Well, I was on Cheers, and I am senile, I guess, so I already forgot the second one.
A small medical practice in the Bronx.
A small medical practice in the Bronx to...
Hanging out with an acerbic friend in Los Angeles.
Hanging out with an acerbic friend in Los Angeles.
Who and where in the U.S. am I now, Sarah?
Oh.
You're going to need an answer.
I know, and I'm going to say that I'm Ted Danson, even though I think it's wrong. Oh, really?
Nice.
Sweet, and then I'm in Nevada.
Correct. Oh, you are on CSI.
Congrats. You forgot after Becker, being Sarah. On, how dare you?
After being on Cheers, Becker.
I could, Joe.
And curb your enthusiasm. Nice. I went from a high school computer lab in Neptune, California, to visiting a polygamous?
Polyamorous?
Well, I don't know.
Polyglamorous, everyone.
I don't know. Gamorous, it says. Trip me up. But you're right. That's what this was. What Tara said.
Okay.
Household.
Yeah.
In Sandy, Utah.
Right.
Look, I just read what people give me, folks.
Okay.
To the authority headquarters in Louisiana. Who and where in the U.S. am I now? High school computer lab in Neptune, household in Sandy, Utah, the authority headquarters in Louisiana. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
I'm going to guess, based on Louisiana, that it's someone from True Blood, trying to triangulate that with someone who was also on Veronica Mars and Big Love. Coming up with absolutely nothing.
Anybody else know?
No, I'm stymied. No.
It's a really great last name. Tina Majorino.
Tina Majorino. I don't know where she'd be now, though.
She lives in Washington on Grey's Anatomy, and Tara was right on the three shows.
That's still on?
I wouldn't have known that anyway.
Mars, really? Veronica Mars, Big Love, and True Blood. I went from a private charity hospital in Chicago to the External Influence Division in Seattle, to the Behavioral Analysis Unit in Quantico, Virginia. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Okay. First one, I think, is Chicago Hope. Second one, I have... One of the other two is Criminal Minds. Is it Mandy Patinkin?
And where do I live now, Joe?
So, now here we're in the dread D.C. triangle.
Oh, Delmarva, you bastard.
He's, CIA? Virginia?
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
The show is Homeland. The actor is the Patink. And the shows are Chicago Hope. The one you missed, Joe, the External Influence Division in Seattle was from Dead Like Me.
Dead Like Me, right. Yeah.
Oh, right.
That wasn't a bad show.
It was all right.
I went from a shoe store near Chicago to the Beat in Los Angeles to a slightly boring community of surfers in Imperial Beach, California. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh, my God.
Let me read that again for you, Dave.
Okay,
I went from a shoe store near Chicago to the Beat in Los Angeles to a slightly boring community of surfers in Imperial Beach, California. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Oh, my God. I can picture his face, but I can't think of his name. Just hit the buzzer.
Anybody else?
Ed O'Neill.
Ed O'Neill is correct. Married with Children. Dragnet. And John from Cincinnati.
Wow.
Currently living in California on Modern Family.
Right.
I went from a sports news studio in New York City to a family-run funeral home in Los Angeles to a darling legal office in New York City. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
I'm Peter Krause.
Peter Krause Narn from Forever. Sports Night. 6 Feet Under. Sexy Money.
Dirty Sexy Money.
Dirty Sexy Money. And Nice Darling...
Yeah.
Like, subtweet in the clue there. I know he's on Parenthood now, but I don't know where that show takes place, so I'm just going to guess California.
Good guess!
Good guess.
Yay!
I went
Bay
from
Area.
The communications office of the White House to a large family home and food company in Pasadena to a plastic surgery office for the stars in Hollywood.
Right.
Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
Rob Lowe.
And I am in?
Indiana.
Correct.
Nice. Not much longer.
Rob Lowe of the West Wing.
Only for a few more weeks.
Large family home and food company on?
Brothers and Sisters.
And plastic surgeon in?
Behind the Candelabra.
Correct. And now he lives in Indiana on Parks and Recreation. Can we have a score tally, please, Tara?
Yeah, I have 3.
Uh-huh.
Dave has 6. Sarah has 9. Joe has 12.
Ooh, all right. Well, we're getting, you each have uno more questions. That means 1.
Oh!
I went.
This is a wrap.
I went from a sexy apartment complex in West Hollywood to a sexy law office in Boston to a not very sexy suburban home near Chicago. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
All right. Sexy apartment complexes are always the purview of Melrose Place. Second one is what? Sexy law office in Boston?
That's correct.
Which is, well, either Ellie McBeal or The Practice. But
a not very sexy suburban home in Chicago is near Chicago is your third.
Okay. Oh, okay. Courtney Thorne Smith. The third one's got to be whatever, according to Jim.
Mm-hmm.
The undead corpse of according to Jim. Courtney Thorne Smith is on television right now, huh?
Yep.
That's interesting. Good for her. I'm very happy for her.
Now, where should she be on television?
That's what the devil promised her.
She's on 2.5 Men, right? Which is. Exists out of space and out of time, but also probably California. Okay.
Correct. All right. Last question for our next contestant. I went from an oil tycoon's lavish mansion in Denver, Colorado, to an explosive apartment complex in West Hollywood, to the mayor's office in New York City. Who and where in the U.S. am I now? Oil tycoon's lavish mansion in Denver. Explosive apartment complex in West Hollywood. Mayor's office in New York City. Who am I? What actor am I?
As usual, I don't know.
I am, in fact, Heather Locklear. I am from Dynasty, Oil Tycoon. I am from Melrose Place, Explosive Apartment Complex. And I'm from Spin City. And I am currently on Franklin and Bash in California.
Is she really?
Yep.
Oh my God.
As of this season.
Program.
So this is Sarah's last, right?
Yep.
I went from a television studio in Minneapolis to a shared house in Miami to a nearby hotel also in Miami. Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
I'm Betty White. And I'm in Ohio.
Correct. Sure. I am from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And then Golden Girls, and then...
Golden Palace. That's so dirty. And now she's on Hot in Cleveland.
That's correct. All right, Tara.
Golden Palace.
I went from a Chinese-American spaceship on the fringe of the star system...
Fuck's sake. Yes? Yes. I bet I know who it is. I'm making a bet with myself about who this is. Go on.
To a spy organization based somewhere on the Eastern Bloc...
Yep.
To a weight loss camp in California... Who and where in the U.S. am I now?
You're Gina Torres.
And what shows are we talking about?
The first one was Firefly.
That's right.
The second one was Alias.
That's right.
The third one was Huge.
That's right.
And the last one, she's on both Hannibal and Suits right now.
That's right.
So she's either in New York or Virginia.
Nailed it. You got
Ontario
all the options.
Did she get 2 points for that?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, Gina Torres, and one for that and one for the show.
She got 2 points. She got 2 points in total. No extra points is what Dave's asking.
Yes. Oh, yeah, no.
Well, that ends our game. Let's get the score. See who won.
Joe Reed won with 14 points. Sarah was in second place with 11. Dave B. was 6. And then me bringing up the rear with 5.
Woo! Congratulations, Joe!
Thanks.
Good job, Joe.
Joe!
Joke.
All right, guys, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We examine the state of AMC, and Dave C. explained why he's not a crackpot for pitching an Adult Swim version of blue-collar reality shows. Dave B. brought us his Gus Fring Tiny Triumph, and Matthew brought us Futurama's Time Keeps on Slipping, which was inducted into the Extra Hot Great canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Joe was the winner of this week's Game Time. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Previously TV under the EHG hashtag, and on our site at previously.tv, where you can learn more about submitting your own canons, game times, crackpots, and more. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Margaritas.
Joe Reed.
Four waters, please.
Sarah Bunting.
Off we go, apparently.
And Dave Bunting.
I got nothing.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
We must leave now, for we are needed elsewhere. But we wish you Godspeed.